Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Vijay Vaitaswaran of The Economist magazine, the energy and green innovation editor, to take us to what to watch for in COP26, the gathering of the eagles and the doves in Glasgow, Scotland, to discuss climate change upon us and the immediacy of action. Vijay, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. You look to the emerging story of private enterprise, especially fintech, financial enterprise, as an answer to a puzzle that now confounds the sovereign states because of their different prosperity mechanisms, because of the demand for energy that's constant in China and in Europe right now, especially. However, you at The Economist in a leader have doubts that the financial fintech world, the world holding trillions of dollars of investment, is adequate to the task. How so? Good evening to you, Vijay.
Good evening, John. Yes, good to be with you again. So there's no doubt that private sector money as well as innovations and efforts will play a role in dealing with climate change. It has to. It may even play the larger role. But it will not do it spontaneously or out of a sense of charity or goodwill. You know, we believe in capitalism in much of the world, and so companies and investors will act in their self-interest. And so that's the problem. A problem like climate change, which deals with something that's external, is not illegal. It's not like some other forms of pollution or other kinds of activities. And so it's not regulated properly. There's no meaningful carbon price on most economic activity around the world. And for that reason, we cannot count on markets or companies to solve this problem for us, no matter how much money is involved. There has to be a framework. Markets and companies respond very effectively when there is a framework, meaning some sort of guiding rules, a sense of what direction policy is going. And that's the challenge for those who are gathered in Glasgow, Scotland now, as they enter the second half of their deliberations, is to send the right signal that next 10 years and the next 30 years is going to see significant action from governments to curb emissions, to encourage and reward green investments, be that in batteries or clean tech or other technologies we haven't even innovated yet. And so unless we get a clear signal that countries are committed, that's not going to produce the kind of results that we expect from those trillions of dollars in private sector money.
Let's use some statistics here to give an understanding of the challenge. The listed firms not state-controlled, in other words, outside of the reach of the sovereign powers now debating, are a disappointing small fraction, between 14 and 32%. That means no matter what the intentions of the banks or the insurance companies or large technology, alone cannot move the story. Is that how to read that, Vijay?
Well, you're absolutely right to look at what's not included. Look, the trillions and trillions that leaders like Mark Carney, who's a big figure in all of this, a former head of the Bank of England, shepherding a group of investors in ESG money, so-called environmental social governance money, that's a big trend now. This is a good thing that there is a lot of interest in investing in this area. But let's remember, there are a lot of actors in the world that don't respond to ESG money that are state-owned enterprises. For example, the Saudi National Oil Company, to give one example, is going to keep pumping oil till kingdom come. The Chinese state-owned enterprise, PetroChina, alone produces more greenhouse gas emissions than the country of Vietnam and the country of South Korea put together, just to give one example. And so you're not going to see a whole lot of impact of ESG money on those kinds of polluters. So there are limits to what this kind of voluntary action can do.
Also, measuring. My understanding is we're still discovering emissions from unusual sources. For example, I was reading just momentarily about supply chain emissions, and how you can have good intentions, but if you're part of a network of consumer goods, you have to busy yourself with what your clients, what your part of the supply chain that makes your business possible emits. And that is very difficult to measure. What you tell me is that everyone now, wanting a carbon footprint for their portfolio, has different approaches or are frustrated by the lack of clarity. How to put this, Vijay?
You put your finger on something very important. That is, the emissions that a company has is not just based on what it makes. You have to go and look beyond the actual product and the manufacturing process to the supply chain. So where do you get your goods and inputs? Where do you get your stuff? You may have a perfectly clean factory powered by solar in Wyoming, but if all of your inputs come from China, which has a predominantly coal-fired grid, and they're shipped in container vessels burning very dirty bunker fuel, then your carbon profile is a lot worse than you claim. And then all of these goods are delivered through Amazon using, again, diesel-powered trucks. Then what are we talking about here, right? And in the case of oil companies, for example, making the oil, as it were, getting it out of the ground, producing it, extracting it, refining it, and delivering it to your and my SUVs is, roughly speaking, only about a fifth of the emissions. You and I burning that gasoline in our cars is the lion's share of the emissions contributed by the gasoline. And so we actually have to be very clear about what we mean. We have to look at life cycle emissions, and we have to make sure that what the nerds in the climate world call scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3 emissions, that is looking at the entire life cycle of a product or service, is taken account of. And there are huge measurement problems, but we're working on them. It's good that we recognize this, and there are a lot of efforts and some sincere efforts underway to try to make it more science-based rather than greenwashing or bogus.
Pointing fingers at big oil, pointing fingers at railroads that haul fossil fuels, that is easy. But I learned from The Economist that the five biggest American tech firms, we can guess what they are, have a carbon intensity, emissions per unit of sales, of 3% of the S&P 500 average. That means that there's no way to avoid this, Vijay. My Apple stock is part of the problem.
Well, there's two ways to read that. One is that, yes, of course. I mean, just because you use, let's say, an Apple product and ride a bicycle doesn't mean you're carbon free. That Apple product was made in Shenzhen or some other place in China and shipped, and there are embedded emissions involved, and China doesn't have a meaningful carbon price, although Europe may place a carbon tariff on these products going forward. That's an interesting concept that Biden administration thinking about too. But at the moment, yeah, you're a bit of a free rider taking advantage of this if you use your phone. The other way to look at it is that this is also dangerous. Tech companies generally have a lower footprint in terms of carbon than some of the industrial companies. Let's say a big broad-shouldered energy company in the Midwest is probably going to use a lot more greenhouse gas emissions coming out of their tailpipes and smokestacks. If, as investors, all we do is have our portfolio shift to putting money into Facebook, but we still continue to buy products and services from companies that make dirty stuff in a dirty way, we haven't really solved the problem.
With a minute to go, Vijay, you followed this story for many years. You were my leader more than a decade ago, which is why we're having happy conversations. Is this encouraging that they're talking about what they don't know? Is there a change in the weather?
There is a change in the weather in a bad way, because climate change is upon us. And we can see its effects already. I wish we had acted 20 years ago when this was already beginning to be clear, or 10 years ago when I began to ring the alarm bells on this. But now everyone in America, I think, understands, really, that this opinion poll show overwhelmingly Democrats and Republicans say, yes, I can see climate change is real and we should do something about it. And now we're beginning to talk seriously about what to do and with what urgency we should do things. I think that's good. I wish there were more action in Congress. We don't yet see it in the American Congress. I hope that'll change in coming months and years.
Vijay Vajaswaran, the energy and green innovation editor for The Economist magazine, commenting on the financial component of solving climate change soon enough. Remember that 11-year countdown, unless and until. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.